It's been 6 weeks since a devastating explosion rocked the port of Beirut, killing hundreds and leaving widespread destruction throughout the city. Caused by the negligent storage of nearly 3,000 tons of ammonium nitrate in a portside warehouse, the disaster has dramatically exposed the criminal nature of the Lebanese ruling class. Indie Media's Alex Wisson had the opportunity to speak to Gilbert Archer, Professor of Developmental Studies and International Relations at the School of Oriental and African Studies in London, and he began by addressing the impact and significance of the explosion.
If you say that the wider significance, of course, that is going beyond the particulars, if you know, of this explosion. But I would like to start by saying that I doubt we will anytime soon have any clear idea of the particulars of that explosion, because everything is so opaque in Lebanon. There is no real rule of law, if you want, and really functioning state. And there has been a refusal by the authorities to allow for an international investigation. So it is very, very unlikely that we get to any kind of clarity about why this had been this amount, terrible amount of ammonium nitrate had been left for 6 years in a major warehouse. That is, if even you think of the cost, the economic cost of keeping that, in a, you know, of mobilizing a whole very centered warehouse in a port, that wouldn't make sense. So when you add to this that this was highly explosive material left there for so long, this is, of course, the very least you could say about it is that it is criminal negligence.
And despite the scale of the disaster and the way it's rocked Lebanese society, you think that it's unlikely that it will be a turning point in terms of sweeping away corruption. As you've mentioned, there's no prospect of an international investigation or indeed any kind of independent domestic investigation.
Right. No, I mean, unfortunately, it can't be a turning point in itself because you would need some leverage to change things. And at the very beginning, the protest movement that started in Lebanon in October last year, in October 2019, this popular protest movement, which chose for a central slogan, all of them means all of them, and the slogan meaning that they reject the whole ruling class, all components together, without rejecting the usual divisions, sectarian divisions, religious sectarian divisions, political chapels or whatever you would call them, that control the country and the state. So this movement hoped for a while, in the immediate aftermath of the explosion, that such a huge event, such an obvious criminal negligence of the state in all its components, because for 6 years everybody ruled in Lebanon, everybody had a share of responsibility. They believed that this would lead to the whole institution collapsing, and you had a beginning of MPs resigning, so the belief was that finally the movement could get what they want, which is a government that is a transitory government that would be dependent from the ruling class in all its components, and new elections on the basis of a new electoral law that would be different from the existing one, which is just designed to reproduce the same ruling class.
With uncanny timing, one might argue, only a fortnight after the port explosion, the Special Tribunal for Lebanon, based in The Hague, delivered its findings after a years-long investigation into the assassination of former Prime Minister Rafik Hariri. A low-ranking member of Hezbollah was declared guilty of the crime, while three other Hezbollah suspects were exonerated. What does the assassination and indeed the trial itself reveal about the intrigues and the complexities of Lebanese politics?
Well, I mean, the fact is that this so-called special tribunal to Lebanon could not go anywhere. And, you know, how can you do an investigation if you can't interrogate the principal, the those who are suspected, the alleged perpetrators, and you can't interrogate behind them the forces that stand behind them. In this case, you have two of them, Hezbollah on the one hand, and the Syrian government, the Syrian state on the other hand. So this special tribunal was a failure. I mean, they only established the evidence for the direct participation of one person among the accused in the assassination. They have high suspicion about the rest, but they didn't have the concrete evidence needed for a tribunal to condemn, you know. And that's the point. And that's why I'm saying also that we won't know anytime soon what really was behind this, the fact that you had 3,000 or close to 3,000 tons of nitrate ammonium in the heart of a port for 6 years. I mean, this is just unbelievable. But to get back to the point of the protest movement, the hopes of the protest movement were dissipated, were thwarted by the French intervention, the intervention of the French president, who came a couple of days after the blast, and then later on, a few days ago, to celebrate, unbelievably, but it's to celebrate the beginning of French colonialism in Lebanon. I mean, I wrote a piece at the time saying that, I mean, this is quite something that the country, instead of celebrating its independence, is celebrating the beginning of colonialism. And in the presence of the representative of the colonial state, because France had a colonial mandate over Lebanon after the First World War. So France, I mean, the French president played a key role in trying to consolidate the existing ruling class, to reestablish the kind of coalition within this ruling class that has been ruling the country for decades now. And, you know, all this in trying to secure French influence in the country within the ongoing competition that is going that we are seeing in the Mediterranean between various powers, and especially between France and Turkey.
The backdrop of all of these events is a massive economic crisis confronting the people of Lebanon, with unemployment over 30%, the currency collapsing in value, regular electricity outages in the capital, and food prices skyrocketing. You've talked about the anti-government protests, Professor Achkar. Just how hard is daily life in Lebanon at the moment, and how much is this economic crisis been the combustible material, if you like, that has helped fuel these anti-government protests over the course of the last 12 months?
Well, it's absolutely huge. It's just that over those last few months, since October, the number of people under the poverty line in Lebanon has more than doubled. And it is now more than half the population that stand below the poverty line, the national poverty line. That is absolutely huge. Not to mention, yes, indeed, the number of unemployed, who are part now, many of them are part of this people below the poverty line. This has become absolutely huge because there have been hundreds of thousands of people who are turned jobless in a country of only 4 million people. So you have a lot of problems accumulating there, and this has exploded last year. When the economy started collapsing, this is an economy that was built on speculative schemes, banking schemes, through which some people, part of this kind of conglomerate between the banking sector and the ruling class, made billions of dollars. And made billions of dollars that they deposited abroad, they invested or deposited abroad. And at some point, this whole scheme had to collapse. I mean, it was known for several years that it was going to collapse. Many people were just, I mean, the question was more, why hadn't it collapsed yet? And then it happened. It happened as was expected by so many experts and those who knew about the reality. And this closed, I mean, this is another criminal negligence. We are seeing criminal negligence about the explosion, but all the country is victim of all forms of criminal negligence, because when you let an economy get to the point of collapse, as it is now, with the local currency just falling abruptly in such a way, I mean, it turned from 1,500 from the local units of the local currency for the dollar to it reached at some point 10,000, just over a few months. So this is a huge of purchase power for the people who don't have dollars, and there are a majority in the country, and in a country which imports most of what it consumes. So it gives you an idea of the severity of the problem, which is absolutely huge, and this is why you have this big protest movement. But it is facing very difficult conditions because you have this rotten state, rotten, corrupt state on the one hand. You also have a state within the state, which is Hezbollah, which is a state directly linked to a foreign state, which is Iran, and which is openly taking its orders from Iran, so and is more powerful militarily than the official state. So, I mean, instead of facing one state, the protest movement is facing two, and that's a huge task. And it's not very, I mean, it's difficult to see how it could get beyond that, how real progress could be achieved. I think the key would be the ability or not of the protest movement to organize.
You've just talked about all of those difficulties facing the protest movement, Professor Achkar, and yet the protests do continue and they've been widespread and at times very large and sustained over a long period of time now, despite the state repression you've talked about and the disruptions of a global pandemic as well. They're protests which have been characterised, as you've said, by a rejection of the entire political class, not just the incumbent government. In which direction then do you think might this movement go, and what are the politics of the movement broadly speaking? It seems to me that one of the really very positive aspects of the movement is its non-sectarian character, for instance. And of course, the Lebanese state is very much founded on the sectarianism coming out of the French colonial period and the civil war.
Yeah, well, I was pointing to the fact that indeed you have some positive steps have happened recently within the protest movement, because there's an increasing conscious of the fact that without proper organization, you can't go very far. You know, just to take an example, in Algeria, you had for 1 year huge demonstrations every week, every Friday. And they couldn't achieve their central objectives because they didn't have any form of organization that could speak for them. And I mean by that could be a very democratic organization. I'm not speaking of any kind, you know, of leader or whatever. But you need some form of organization that represents the movement, and that is what is needed in Lebanon. Plus the fact that, of course, to overcome this whole terrible legacy of decades of corruption, you need to get out of the neoliberal system, of this whole neoliberal paradigm, which has presided over the so-called reconstruction of Lebanon after its long civil war, that is after 1990, and you need to reconstruct a social state providing for the needs of the people. That is absolutely central.
Finally, Professor Achkar, Lebanon has long been a plaything of the imperialist powers and a pawn in regional power games involving Iran, Syria, Saudi Arabia and Israel. And of course, you've talked about the role of France in recent times of post the port explosion. But looking into the future, how likely is it, do you think, that given the dynamics of the protest movement and everything that's going on, how likely is it that the Lebanese people will be able to, at some point in the future, once and for all, forge their own independent path in the world? Or will they yet again become victims of foreign manipulations?
Well, that's why I said it's we have to be realistic. It is very, very difficult. It's a very difficult task. The country has been basically ruled since, as I said, the end of the war, its long civil war. So since 1990, which means 30 years now, by a kind of agreement between foreign sponsors. On the one hand, the United States of America, plus their major regional ally, the Saudi Kingdom. On the other hand, the Syrian regime, and later on Iran increasingly. And now, because of the change, the balance of forces between Iran and Syria, it's more Iran than Syria, since the Syrian government has been extremely weakened by the war in Syria itself. So, I mean, these governments, plus the French now, re-intervening very... centrally, I mean, you have some kind of competition over control of this country. This country has, even historically, if you take Congo, since the 19th century, and even or even if you take it since its creation in the present borders, which goes back to one century ago, 1920, this country has permanently be ruled by foreign control, foreign influences, foreign powers. And indeed, it needs to get rid of that. But to get rid of that, you need the people. You need a people able to assert its own sovereignty. When the people asserts its sovereignty, its popular sovereignty, then you can get national sovereignty. You can get real independence from imperialism.
That was Professor Gilbert Achkar from the School of Oriental and African Studies at the University of London, speaking to Alex Wisson about the multifactorial social crises facing the people of Lebanon.